You're listening to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster, the industry's leading sports technology provider and coach education platform. Today, I've got the honor of sitting down with high school strength and conditioning coach at Penfield High School, performance coach at Next Level Strength Conditioning, and collegiate strength and conditioning consultant, Joe Aratari.
Welcome to the Student Athlete Preparation Podcast, hosted by high school strength and conditioning coach, Cody Hughes. This ain't your normal podcast, y'all. He's bringing real discussions about real strategies to improve the student athlete development and preparation process. New episodes every Friday with guests who are all about keeping it real. It'll warn you now. You might get your feelings hurt. The mics are on and the takes are hot. Enjoy this episode. Here's your host, Cody Hughes.
Joe, what's going on, bro?
What's up, man?
What it do, baby? Yeah, man.
How we doing? Dude, I can hear that intro music. Yeah? I love that. I remember that, put that tweet out, like, your intro music makes me want to, like, run through a brick wall and train.
Dude, I hate podcasts that have crappy intro music. Like, they just pulled it from some royalty-free website and, like, sounds like I wanted it to be me. Like, and if you guys know me, like, I'm a hip-hop head, so, like...
No, absolutely. It's either you have the best intro music or you just go right to it. You have none.
Right, right. You know, I completely agree. Well, guys, man, this is long. I've been wanting to, one, just hang out with Joe ever since we did the quarantine meet where we just had strength coaches hop on and just... you know, shoot the crap with each other and hang out. And Joe's a great mind. If you guys don't follow Joe on Twitter, you're really missing out. He does a lot of great things and puts out a lot of content for the industry, just in general. One thing that he does is he speaks his mind, and he's a great addition to what we have here in the industry, and you guys need to hear from him. We're going to hit a lot of topics today. You know, he's kind of a Swiss Army knife. He does a little bit of everything. He works in the high school level. He's in the private sector. He also consults at the college level, which that's a lot. You know, you hit a lot of different ways and you see a lot of different perspectives. Talk to me a little bit about your background, man. Just give us the Reader's Digest version or the Spark Notes version of how you got to where you're at today in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And first and foremost, thanks for you for putting out great content as well. Obviously, this podcast is going to blow up, so I want to give props to you as well, Cody.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm from Rochester, New York, and, you know, for your listeners, basically all I'm going to say is in between Buffalo and Syracuse. And people will probably know where that
gotcha.
Is. Western New York. Yeah, so typically just the SparkNote version, you know, like most strength coaches, maybe not all, but most, grew up playing sports, bunch of different sports. Went on and played collegiate soccer, and honestly, training was one of these things where my dad got me into it in eighth grade, you know, a little bit on the shorter end of things. So obviously wanted to get any competitive advantage I could.
Yeah.
So kind of fell in love with the weight room around that eighth grade. But basically eighth through 12th, like most high school kids, didn't know what I was doing. Didn't even think to get a strength and conditioning coach or trainer. I didn't even know what a strength and conditioning coach was.
Yeah.
Went on to play at the Division III level. We didn't have a strength conditioning coach.
Hey, I didn't either, man. You know, I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah, exactly. And basically, we just got the same recycled summer program. The off season was just, hey, get in the weight room, you know, that type of thing. So obviously, without having any guidance, did my own research, just try and see the web, Team Nation, just bodybuilding.com. Just whatever. Yeah, man, whatever I can get my hands on. And just honestly doing random splits that I found online. I think that really, you know, that was around like going into, you know, sophomore year of college. That kind of continued to fuel my passion for lifting.
Right.
Actually went to school for criminal justice.
Really?
And yeah, man, wanted to be a state trooper. And,
okay. Well, yeah, what made you want to do that? You want to put bad dudes away, like get rid of the drugs guys?
Exactly. I just thought it was cool coming in out of high school. And you know, SVU, Law and Order SVU is my favorite show.
Oh yeah,
so,
man.
Yeah, man. I wanted to work my way up, and obviously a little naive at 17, 18, making that decision. But, long story short, it was around my senior year where I just decided I'm probably not going to pursue criminal justice. I wasn't passionate about it. And I loved fitness. Again, didn't really know what strength and conditioning was. I didn't even know you could work with athletes for a living.
Right.
You know, as crazy as it is. So I changed degrees. Literally as soon as I graduated a week after, I visited SUNY Brockport. They had a kinesiology path that I only needed to stay for an extra 2 years. So yeah, I did 4 years of college and then decide, all right, going back to college.
So you got two degrees. You have two bachelor's degrees.
I have two bachelor's degrees. Yeah. And it was about like 3 months into that program, I went to a conference and it was all college strength and conditioning coaches, pro strength and conditioning coaches, that really kind of, I opened my eyes. I was like, oh my God, like this is a thing. Like I love working out. I like the fitness side of things, but then I was like, well, I'm also an athlete or an ex-athlete at that time. Like, why not I just blend this? And then, honestly, things just, I got really, really lucky. I followed Next Level Strength Conditioning on Instagram because I was looking for a place just to work on myself. Mm-hmm. And I think in my Instagram bio, I had aspiring sport performance coach in my bio. And again, if you don't advocate for yourself, no one else will, right? So that's kind of an important thing.
Yeah, dude.
And then I just, my boss, I think, you know, he was running the account at the time. He hates when I call him boss, but Nate Van Conenberg, the owner of Next Level, saw it, reached out. And then we just kind of connected there. And then at the time, one of the strength coaches at Next Level was the strength coach at Penfield, but he took a job, I think, to work in the Reds organization at the time.
Okay.
So basically Next Level needed a part-time coach, and then they needed to try to, you know, get one of their coaches to fill at Penfield. And then in the matter of literally never training a single person in my life, I applied for both and got position at Next Level and Penfield. And really, since then, it's just kind of blossomed. That was 7 years ago.
Dang. So you've been there for 7 years. You've been doing this for seven years.
It's the only job the only two jobs I had. And again, as you mentioned, I'm contracted out with a small Division III college. Okay. But yeah, as far as, you know, full-time gigs, I've been at Penfield and Next Level for, I think this will be my seventh summer.
Dang, man, that's awesome. Shoot, I've only been coaching for five. You know, it makes me feel like, geez, man, you've been in one spot. You know, like that's a great point I want to make here is like early in my career, you know, I was really like climb the ladder. I want to be college strength coach. My original path was I want to be an SEC because, you know, I'm from the South, baseball, like, because I grew up around Auburn and my dad went to Auburn. I was a big Auburn fan. I was like, I want to be the strength coach for Auburn baseball because I was a baseball guy. And, you know, I went SEC intern, GA, full-time assistant in D1. You know, just rolling, pushing. And dude, I left after 9 months of every job. 3 months intern, 9 months GA, 9 months full time, private sector for 4 months, and then I have my first high school job. And it's funny how I got there and realized, dude, I don't even know if anything that I do is worth a crap. Like, am I even worth my salt? I haven't stayed to see anything. You know, like, and the fact that you've been there for 7 years, you have some serious, like, now it just makes so much sense of why you believe so hard in what you believe, because you've seen it in one place, you know, from a private sector perspective, high school, college. You've been doing this now. There's a lot of value in staying in the same spot and really seeing that turnover. Like if you're coming up on 8 years, you're about to see two full like freshman to senior classes roll through Penfield, right?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And I think, and I want to say I heard this first from Jerry DiFilippo, because I believe he's not a traditional strength and conditioning ex science background.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, not at all. He's a business background. Yeah.
So I graduated college at 22, and then I decided, okay, I'm going to go back to college. So I started, if you think about it, my freshman year of ex science kinesiology at 22.
Yeah.
I had to learn just what I needed to know to get by. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I hate to say this, I didn't have the time to go, you know, super deep into stuff. I just needed to know the surface level content of like, all right, this is the reason why, this is how, okay, to improve performance, how to get stronger, faster. And again, like being in the college sector, high school, private, seeing high school, middle school, college pros on a day-to-day basis, week to week, like I like to say, like I'm more of the practical based coach. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I need to know what works. In my setting, and obviously each setting is a little bit different. So I almost want to say, like, to my advantage, I think getting into the field a little late kind of helped me because I wasn't naive as an 18-year-old going into college. Like, yeah. Oh, I want to be the, you know, I want this my career path. I was super raw, super green as a 22-year-old. And again, I wasn't really looking for another college experience. So, you know, I just concentrated on what I really needed to know from the, you know, basic level kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. In the world we live in now with so much information at our hands, this is where, like, you know, we can talk about, I heard you say on your podcast how, like, you know, the goal is we want every high school ought to have a full-time strength coach on staff, you know, like, sounds good, right? And honestly, that's what would be nice, but it's just not really feasible. And that's, you know, we're both involved in NHSSCA. We're just trying to help educate folks, give coaches on staff the ability to do that, right? And like, we can't, like, there's so much information at our hands now that some of these sport coaches, if you just have a growth mindset, there's so much education platforms where you can be just fine and be a great strength coach for your arena in your area, you know, just by finding the right mentors, finding the right education, and just being willing to learn. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many, like, I guarantee you, there's many sport coaches at the high school level that would coach circles in the strength conditioning realm around people who have 12 letters behind their name.
Absolutely. I, you know, recently connecting with a local football coach in our area, he was just talking about, we were talking about summer training and their school doesn't have a strength coach. And he brought up Tony Holler. Mm-hmm. And again, I know you kind of put out that episode about him. we don't need to get into that, but like the fact that these coaches are aware of things, well, some coaches are, right? And so I completely agree. And again, the whole thing with like every high school having a strength coach, that's great and all. But at the end of the day, there's levels to this, right? Like Meek Mill, right?
No doubt. You know? 100%.
So like gold level, yeah, every school should have a full-time S&C and athletic trainer at their school.
Yep.
They should have full-time pay, health and benefits. Likelihood that happening, especially in my area in New York, where, let's just be honest, New York strength conditioning, the Northeast in general is severely lacking and we're playing catch up. We're 20 years behind and yeah. We've been getting better, but you know, compared to other schools and, you know, certainly where you are, it just doesn't even come close.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you see like Texas and all these places, Georgia.
Like, I'm sure there's schools in similar situations that we are, but for the vast majority, our weight rooms, our programs don't even compare. But again, like if you are a sport coach or an AD in your area and you know you can't get a full-time S&C, reach out, especially now with the amount of coaches that are doing amazing consult work. I'm sure you, I know like Derek Smith does it.
Yep.
We do it as well for my business. You know, there's a ton of businesses that are willing to help that really, let's be honest, they're not that expensive in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, no doubt. This is very true. Like, and if we talk about like, oh, there should be no money, shouldn't be the excuse. Well, money can be an excuse in some settings. I mean, you're trying to pay one guy, but in the grand scheme of things, just getting a consultant, when you look at the grand like makeup of that, that's not going to be that expensive. Like, to me, there's no excuse for you to reach out and find a consultant. You know, like being able to, whatever that price range looks like. I know it's different for everybody, but you're so true, man. And look in your community. You never know. Like, I'm sure you guys do a great job of going to reach out with coaches. Like you just said, you already connected with a coach that's in the area, a football coach, like my episode 2 with Andy McCloy. He's a guy that's here in town that does it on a really high level, and like being able to help connect him to other high schools and how he does a great job of just giving a resource out. Like if you want somebody to help guide you, man, it's there. You just got to look for it. And talk to me about how you think, because I asked Andy this question and he answered it pretty good, but I want to hear your take too. If a high school administrator is going to look for someone like you or a high school coach even, what questions can you ask or what can you do to try to vet out to make sure that you're getting something quality?
Ooh, that's tough. I think like, you know, this might not be the most favorable answer for some people, but like, I think you got to look at the person's track record.
Yeah.
Like, do they have a consistent line of success across their sport? So if you're, again, like, someone at the high school level and you're trying to vet out and get advice from someone that maybe is also working at the high school level, like do their programs on a whole overall, like have success. And that doesn't mean winning every single year, but you know, this is one of the things where I think you know, if they only have success at their football program or one sport, to me, that's not a great school-wide resource.
Gotcha.
Because that to me personally shows that they maybe only care about one sport. Mm-hmm. And again, like if you're an AD or administrator that's looking to benefit all your sports, all your teams, you know, I'm going to personally want someone that has clout and success in multiple sports. And then again, I do think there's a lot of businesses that do consult, but again, I think like having someone that knows your setting or at least can connect to it. So, you know, typically if you're an administrator at high school level, you're going to try to reach out to guys and girls that are at the high school level, even, you know, and I think, again, I do have that advantage where, you know, being at the private, being at the high school, I can kind of, you know, vet that out. And, you know, I do have experience at the high school level, but, yeah, I would say like a successful track record among multiple sports, you know, I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, no doubt. We were talking in Twitter DMs trying to set up this interview and everything and conversation, and you said something that really perked my ears. And I was like, you know, like in on my podcast, you know, like I'm not really big into topics. I like real conversations and real strategies. Mm-hmm. That's what this podcast is about. Real people, you know, help, like not all this what people want to hear and talking about things that aren't real. And I was like, well, what are you passionate about, Joe? And you said passion's overrated. Joe said passion's overrated. And I don't know if he was being serious or not. And I'm asking you, when you said that, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so let me, the asterisks, right? I'm going to put asterisks next to that because, you know, we always in our field like to say, you know, what's the thing? Context, right? Context
yep.
matters.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure I put out, you know, an article a little bit ago, but like, again, like, passion's great and all, and I'm not crapping on passion, because I think passion is the thing that initially gets us going, especially as like a young up and coming coach. But in the day, like passion without like execution and a plan and like knowing what you're doing, I think just it'll get you nowhere. To me, I look at, and again, this could be like the fitness field in general, but like the okay. super passionate trainer that's always posting, you know, emotional things, or, and again, like that, not that that's bad, but like motivational quotes, I should say,
okay,
or things like that. Like to me, that doesn't get you anywhere. And to me, it reminds me of the rah-rah coach that's just yelling, yelling, yelling. It's all hype. Doesn't really do much. Like you're excited in the moment, but two plays later, you forget that.
Right.
You know, it's like listening to hype music. I love it. I do it. But at the end of the day, does it really help me when it comes time to like game, you know, getting down to it?
Yeah. You know, I asked, Gary Schofield said last week that passion isn't like, it's not something like it's you're going to, if you're a passionate person, you're going to live with passion. You're not yeah. just passionate about one thing, you know? So that kind of yeah. falls in line.
And I think like passion goes in line with like, just like knowing your greater purpose and why. So I think to me, like when people are overly passionate, it almost can come across as, I don't want to say cheesy, but it can come across as cheesy or fake. Like if you have to tell someone like, I'm so passionate about this, I want to help you. Like to me, it's like, no, you're not. Like,
yeah,
you know, like show me through your actions, not so much your words, kind of, so to speak. And that's kind of like how I was brought up. And I was probably that person coming into the field too. So I've definitely learned the hard way where, you know, like you can't just have lip service. Like you actually need to execute.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, be you, you know, there's a time and place for juice, time and place for hype. I mean, Don't think there's too many, like people take these thoughts that are really good in intention and then they turn it into something else, especially on Twitter. Like,
oh, yeah.
Let's not act like being hyped and being juice is a bad thing. Quit acting like it's not. Like, it doesn't mean like you see a coach in a weight room getting super excited for a kid or a lot of hype. You know, you watch guys like I've seen a lot of videos from like Army football. Guys are surrounded by a rat going crazy while I do like squatting. It's not a bad thing as long as it's real, you know? If it's real, is it genuine? Is it organically engineered, right? Did it just happen on its own?
Dude, that's the thing. Like Jake, my roommate and I, Jake Topple, we talk about all the time because like people crap on other people that aren't in their situations. Like,
yeah,
if you've never worked in a, let's just be honest, if you never worked at a college or even like a really good high school strength conditioning program that dudes are lifting big ass weight, like don't say anything.
Yeah, man.
Like, if you haven't been in that setting, and again, like, if they're real and genuine and authentic, like, who cares? They're being themselves. And I'd bet to imagine most of those athletes love those dudes and love those girls.
Exactly.
Love those train coaches.
Well, they'll see right through the crap. Like, if for some reason he's not that way, and then all of a sudden the camera turns on and all of a sudden they turn into a new guy.
Oh yeah.
They see through that crap, man. They're not in, they don't, kids know way more than you think. I can promise you that.
Like Lou Carrera, if you look at some of the comments from his athletes genuinely love him.
Yeah.
And you know, Maine would run him through a brick wall through him. So there's a time, and even me personally, I'm sure yourself, like sometimes I'm hype in the weight room, depending on which team I'm with. Like, and you know, again, this isn't being fake, but like you have to wear different hats as a coach. And
absolutely.
Some teams would not like me being like all up in their face, like hyping them up. Like they'd be like, no, like I'm just going to lift and get out of here.
Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, it's very much like
a culture.
Yeah, man. Like I'll give an example in my world. Football is very much like it's all business. And like some coaches want, like, I want a huge finisher and everybody going crazy and passion, energy. And like my head football coach is like, no, I want us to execute, get in, get out. We're all about business. Now that doesn't mean that we're not cranking the music and having a good time, but our focus is on execution. If some of that organic energy comes with it, we're all about it. We're not going to force it. You know, then you've got other programs that want a finishing type exercise or something like that to create this energy. Like, for example, if you've worked with girls basketball before, they're a different animal. Like they're a different personality. They drive off of a lot of energy from my, you know, I've been working with girls basketball everywhere I've been, at the college level and at high school now. Like they're just a different type of kid, you know, a different type of person that fit that mold. You know, you kind of see parallels with every sport, you know, like the stereotypes for hockey players and baseball players and all that. But you're right. It's not that you're being fake, is that you're matching the culture in order to help that team win, you know, because at the end of the day, a really good strength coach that coaches more than one team, they have a huge challenge in attaching to that head coach and trying to just echo what they're doing, you know, what they're preaching for their program. You know, you can't just take it and run with whatever you feel. Because at the end of the day, I don't think the strength coach has a whole lot of power if you're disconnected from the head coach. You know, you can build relationships on a personal level, but as far as a team culture side goes, I don't think you're going to be able to make as much of an impact if you're in the team setting. Now, private setting, that's different. It's a whole different situation, whole different setting where you're just kind of helping the individual for the most part. But if you're completely disconnected from the head coach, I don't know how much of an impact you could really make.
I don't think you can. I really don't. I think you hit the nail on the head perfectly there.
And you can see when there's tension between coaches, like even just assistant coaches, like when they're not on the same page. And then you get a staff where everybody's on the same page, you can feel the energy. You can feel that it's different. We're going to segue a little bit here into a recent tweet that I had. So, you know, everybody's accusing me of being clickbaity, but whatever. You know, I got you to engage, so I threw my bait out there and you bit it. So talked about this summer, been sitting down, you know, it's here May 21st and we're getting ready to segue into summer and getting our programs ready to roll. You know, just got done with graduation, getting to turn the page. And I put out there and I was like, guess what, guys, what if I told you that none of my football strength conditioning this summer is going to include a back squat? And it started blowing up pretty quick. Like people were excited about it and people took it and ran with it. Somebody called me Body by Boyle from the South. And I was like, no, that's not what that is. That doesn't mean I don't like this back squat, guys. Like, don't do that. Like, what up to Mike Boyle that he's completely anti that. That's fine. I'm sure I'll get him on and we'll speak about that eventually, but that's not what I am, you know? So I want to talk about this and you riffed on it a little bit, basically talking about exercise selection and programming. You know, it's an important thing because it's so contextual based off of many different factors. What can you coach? What do your kids need? Where is your team's at as far in the spectrum of performance? Like when you step into a new team and they've never really trained before, that's going to affect how you select an exercise. You've been with a team for 6 years. It's going to be different in how you select exercise. So Joe, tell me a little bit about how you go through selection, exercise selection and programming, and how, give me a couple examples of where it may seem like from the outside questionable, but then you give the context for it to make sense. Does that make sense? I may be putting you on the spot here to kind of give an example, but
yeah, we can kind of talk through that. I kind of get what you're saying a little bit.
I can give my example and go from it if I need to.
I'll give my like short answer. For me, when it comes to programming, like I have a set plan, but then at the end of the day, like things change. So I program basically like month to month, so to speak.
Okay.
And I keep most of our main lifts the same for about, you know, 3-4 weeks.
Okay.
For me, when it comes to like the actual exercise selection, like I'm only looking for what works for that person.
Okay.
And that's why and again, I know in the team setting is a little difficult, but that's why I love working the private sector, because 100% of our athletes do not question what we do.
Yeah.
So like at our gym, we don't back squat that much. And we have our reason why. But at our high school, I back squat because I know like if I don't teach them here, they're going to do it the Y by themselves.
Right.
And I'm working with hundreds and hundreds of athletes at the high school. Private sector is obviously a little different. For me though, like, I really don't care like what it is. I'm just looking for a stimulus. So at the end of the day, like if I'm trying to increase strength, like in lower body strength, and you know, I have my quad dominant and I have my hinge dominant, and obviously there's a little bit of you know, carryover, especially with like a trap bar deadlift.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, like personally, I don't feel as though the body really cares. So I'm just looking for what the athlete enjoys doing and wants to do, can do it well without pain, and then progressively can load it up.
Yeah.
And I take that same approach for power, speed, you know, hypertrophy. So like at the end of the day, like we have our buckets and we have our exercises, but working with athletes again at the private sector, kind of figuring out like if one of my athletes, like I really hate front squats, I hate back squats, like they're paying good money, we're not going to do that. Yeah. I'm just going to find something else that works for them.
Sure.
High school level. Again, I kind of touched on it, but like, I like to teach everything because like I said, if they don't learn it correctly with me, they're going to go do it like a donkey by themselves at the Y.
Yep.
But also if they do play in college, I don't know what their college is going to do. So again, I want them to learn everything.
Yeah.
Just be well-rounded. I really liked your tweet just because you had a really great sense of why.
Yeah. And I want to dive into that for sure. Cause like, I want to clarify for those that read that tweet and that listen to this podcast. So talking about exercise selection, because I've kind of made a huge change in philosophy for the most part on squatting. And I've come a long way from it. You know, I used to be a big, big fan. I mean, where we all started was like, you know, the first thing, or really the two things that you, when you get into this industry, is don't squat high and how much can you bench? You know, like when you're very raw in this thing, it's like, don't squat high. Like, That's an unwritten rule. If your athletes are squatting high, you suck. And so the first thing was like, you got to get deeper. You got to get depth on squatting. That's kind of like your first like litmus test of you being a good strength coach. I swear that was like, I didn't realize that as a young coach and young GA until, you know, down the road. And so trying to find ways to teach it well, to achieve squat depth and doing all this, and then realizing that, you know, the front squat was going to carry over to actually being able to squat deeper if you front squat based off of levers. I really liked the clean and saw the front squat was a carryover to the clean. And that's where I started, was like my first thing that I put out that I thought was really, you know, one of my ideas was like, in high school, we're not going to back squat. We're going to run with the front squat. And I did that for about 2 years and started to realize that, one, like, trying to force an exercise on an athlete is a really bad idea. Cause like, I started to see so many different athletes with different shapes and different sizes, different femur lengths. Like, you get a lanky basketball player who has a really short torso and a really long femur, like, you're going to have a really tough time getting to really, you know, in stiff ankles, like you're going to have a really tough time getting to depth in a front squat. You got some kids that are so stiff and have no idea how to differentiate, like getting in a front rack position where they cannot get into a front rack position without getting into lumbar extension. They can't T-spine extension without lumbar. They don't know how to move their scaps. So I was like, okay, well, now it's all about technique. We got to work technique. We got no technique overload, technique overload, technique overload. Well, the end of the day, I'm realizing like you're not getting your kids strong.
Yeah, you're just putting them in a bubble.
Like you're teaching like, skill. Okay, cool. But are these kids Olympic lifters? Yeah. No, they're not. They need to have some type of strength, something you can load up to get tissue adaptation to withstand them playing multiple sports. So that's when I kind of made the shift towards the Zercher squat, because I realized that the Zercher squat for me is just an extension of a goblet squat. Teach the goblet squat to teach the pattern, go into Zercher squat so you can load it up infinitely. You know, it's a front loaded.
Yeah, completely agree with that.
And it smokes. I'm starting to realize with the Zercher squat, because right now we clean, we do zero front squatting, and all of our interior squatting is Zercher. Like, well, how do you clean and not front squat? Well, catching the clean and doing a front squat is not the same skill, in my opinion. They overlap a little bit. But with the Zercher squat, because of the position of it, it smokes their core stability. And they have to learn how to stabilize. And that in itself is translating over to everything else. Like everything else as far as sports movement, back squatting, everything like that. And then I decided this offseason with football, I wanted to start teaching the box squat, because I was just so – I got a buddy of mine named Lucas White, who's a good friend of mine. He's an assistant strength coach for Boise State football. And we've known each other for 4 or 5 years now. And he's been a huge fan of it. And I never really knew how to teach it. We talked about it and started to realize, like, here's my rationale for wanting to implement it here. So my football, my offensive line athletes, my line athletes, of how often, like, if you look at the position of offensive line, where they are constantly playing on the inside of their feet. If you look at the way they get into a stance, very adductor driven. So if you look at box squatting in a wide stance, with, you know, feet flared out, really forcing the groin to be strong, and then being really good and strong off of a box from a starting strength perspective, that's 100% translatable to football and playing playing line. Not necessarily being a skill guy, because there's a lot more elasticity in the sport, but there's not as much being an offensive line or a defensive line athlete. So we started doing that. And as we had a great offseason. So our skill guys were back squatting and Zercher squatting, and split squatting. Our offensive line athletes were exclusively box squatting along with the Zercher squat, which we're getting full knee flexion in the Zercher squat, like absolutely to the bottom, and in our split squats. And I started looking at this summer and thought, okay, let's look at the whole picture, because this is where strength coaches, I think, have to get better, is you have to look at the whole picture of what they're doing at practice counts. What they're doing outside of here counts on their nervous system. You have to look at all that, right? And I know I'm being long-winded here, but I want to be thorough. That in Alabama, so like I'm going to give the contrast between the college game and how it looked like in high school. So college, let's look at off-season. Starts in January, spring ball around March, beginning of April. You've got a small May period, mostly off. You come back, you got June and July sessions, about 8 weeks. And then you've got fall camp, but you're not doing any football stuff. Like, they're not doing anything else at the college level. So you have to get them ready work capacity wise, running volume wise, their hamstrings, their nervous system, their tissue to be prepared for fall camp, because it's brutal. And that's when the most injuries happen. In Alabama, high school football doesn't look that way. Like, we had an off season. I'm at a small school. We don't have spring ball, but they're doing skill work. There's a rule in Alabama where you can do 2 hours a week for 10 straight weeks of skill work with your whole team. So like, you're practicing 2 hours a week, but it's not like full practice and pads. Like, they're out there doing like just the fundamental stuff, you know, that we implemented some speed work, and then doing some, you know, let's break down route running. Let's work on our individual stuff. Let's get some footballs out, work exchanges. They're doing things that they would script in practice for 10 straight weeks. Then we hit June coming up. We're really going to start, because of the schedule's wonky this year with July 4th being on a Sunday. So we're starting June 2nd, and we'll have 8 weeks or so leading into August. And then I'm looking at my calendar right now, we'll have 3 weeks till we play. But this is our schedule: Monday through Thursday, we lift 3 days. So we'll go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, lift. Wednesday, speed development for an hour. Directly after that, we have football practice for an hour. In the summer, you can practice. We're doing full scripted practices, but in shorts. Like, we're running through.
That's wild.
We don't have to condition. Like, conditioning doesn't, because we have such, think about how many, we have 10 weeks in the off season, 8 weeks in the summer, 3 weeks of camp. I mean, you're looking at 18, you know, 20 weeks of properly progressing practice and running volumes where conditioning doesn't have to happen because you're playing your sport. Yeah, you know, I mean, like guys will be ready to roll. So
the best way to condition, just do your skill work.
Right. If you can. And
if you can and play. Yeah, exactly.
At the college level, you can't do that. You can't be with your coaches and play the game. So you have to get it somewhere else. That's why you have to be so – why conditioning is important at the college level and doing high-speed work. So when you get to fall camp, I mean, you're either ready or you're not. You know, at the high school level, it's different. So circling back to my tweet, I realized, look, I'm at a small school. Most of our guys play both ways. If you look at practice, they don't get a ton of breaks. They're going to be pretty much – in the summer, they get beat up because their running volume on the field goes way high. And my thought was, one, we have to stay strong. How do I, because the way we just came off the offseason, we went in this order. We went work capacity, strength, power. And we just came off a power block, strictly working on rate of force development. How do I maintain strength base to express that on the field without beating up joints? And if I'm just forcing our kids to get into a deep back squat when they feel like crap, I'm actually hurting our team. I'm hurting our practice. If they're hurting in the weight room and then go straight to practice and their reps suck, they're getting worse. I am not a good strength coach. So teaching them a box squat that also helps with acceleration angles, helps with starting strength with our line, helps us still move some heavy weight nervous system wise, and also very friendly on our joints. But then also making sure we're getting all the other stuff right. We're still hitting posterior chain. We're still hitting heavy RDLs. We're still doing trap bar deadlift, which is like a hybrid, like you talked about, depending on how you set it up. And we're going to roll with that all summer. Like, we're not going to front squat or back squat. We're going to strictly box squat everybody, trap bar deadlift, split squat, and call it a day for our lower body strength. So that's my gist right there. I know I went crazy on that, but that's my rationale for it.
I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, besides for games, you're kind of in season. You know what I mean?
100%.
In a sense. So, you know, I would agree completely with that. Like, box squatting in season, we very rarely, if any, full squat in season.
Yeah.
We box squat or we just do some variations or trap bars. So I mean, again, like that's where like you could put this like, oh, we're not squatting this summer and back squatting, people freak out. It's like, well, this is my why. And you clearly have stated that. Again, like Nate Harvey all the time, like box squats, like you're going to save their knees. They're going to feel fresh and they're really not going to get that sore if you're doing, you know, I'm assuming your volume's super low anyways. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They're really not going to get sore from a box squat. From a full squat, probably.
Yep, no doubt. I mean, and then we're doing speed development once a week where we're hitting high speed, trying to get high speed exposure so that when we do run in practice, our tissues are not completely foreign to that. So like trying to look at injury prevention, because look, Joe, the way you look at whether you're working or not is, how did we do in games last year? Like, Joe, we went 10-1 last year. Only game we lost was in the second round of the playoffs. Guess what? We were missing our best player and our smartest player. Our best player, who's got like 20-plus offers, plays probably going to play strong safety, hopefully in the Power 5 level. And then our smartest guy, who plays our free safety, who literally puts everybody in position, both hamstring issues, hamstring pulls, couldn't play, second round. And I'm not saying we could have won that game outside missing those guys, but I guarantee you if they would have been healthy and on the field, we had a much better chance.
100%.
So I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And I started realizing, like, dude, our high-speed exposures during the season were non-existent. We were not doing speed development work. And at practice, the further you get along in the season, you're saving your guys' nervous system. Smart coaches are. Practices start to get shorter. It's all more about execution and film study rather than trying to beat their bodies up. But I wasn't dosing them at all. And, you know, he gets on the field, dude, that's really powerful and tries to break one. Boom. There goes the hamstring.
Yeah. It's an ego check as a strength coach, but I would bet to, you know, like having your best players probably means more important than just getting these guys super, super strong. And that's the thing, too. Like, at the end of the day, especially in other sports, too. But like, you know, I look at like I work with a lot of soccer players.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, male soccer players. Like, is the risk to reward to getting this guy, you know, my ego check, like, oh, my soccer guy's squat heavy, but, you know, he's just fried. And then, like you said, like, goes out and gets hurt.
Dude, I want you to give, like, I just gave the football spiel. Give me, like, the soccer, because we've talked about this off air, the soccer spiel of, like, they're going to play club, they do it, like, how you see big picture soccer players and then how you execute.
100%. So, again, like, and I'll even say this for vast majority of my athletes in the summer training, and I get a lot of pushback from some coaches. Some coaches completely see, but I for conditioning, I'm 100% like against direct conditioning work. Mm-hmm. For most, and I'll kind of touch on soccer, and that, I think that's where like they do get fried out, but there's a big gap in the soccer development. I can only speak in my area.
Sure.
I do think male soccer players don't train enough, and you know, whatever, that's culture or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I can control that, but, as far as like soccer development goes, again, I kind of touched on it. I kind of run like an in-season split because they're constantly in season. High-end players, I mean, I have 2-3 girls that I train that will practice 3 days a week, and then like every other weekend they're going out of town, out of state to play tournaments. So
yeah,
again, I have to, how do you get them, like you said, like how do you develop these attributes, strength, power, speed, and you know, keep their muscle up? So I kind of treat it as an in-season. It's concurrent pretty much all the way from the time they end high school, which is around November, mm-hmm. through the time they end club, which is around June.
And they never stop, just, dude. Holy cow.
It never stops. So if we do any volume work or tempo work, I try to keep it on the front end of the week, as far away as games as possible.
Right.
You know, we're sprinting usually in the front end of the week or closer to towards games, so the back end of the week. So really, it's like day one's like heavy and accessory. Day two is just speed day, dynamic effort type stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of have to run that somewhat concurrent split throughout the whole year because I have to be very, very careful not to get them sore, especially considering these showcases. Like if they haven't committed, they have to perform at the highest level possible.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get recruited. I'm a little bit more aggressive once they commit. I'm like, all right, if you're sore, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Just being a little bit sore for some stuff. But, and again, we talked about it in DMs, like conditioning, you know, you can have all these models of like, oh, soccer runs these energy systems, this. And again, like these kids are playing nonstop skill work practices, private skill trainers. Like, I don't think the risk to rewards there, like, I'm just going to not condition them. Like,
I think that's a great point. It's the same thing with high school football, man. Like if we're working those energy systems in our skill work, like I'm just being honest. When I was a player, like if I knew we had rough conditioning at the end of practice, and you can call me soft, whatever, because I probably was pretty soft in high school, that I was not trying to go hard in my practice because I was scared to death that conditioning was going to be terrible. You know, 100%. Like kids are going to save. You're not putting all your effort and energy into skill work, so you're not improving into sport.
I'll one up you. I won't add her. Obviously, she's in high school. I won't say her name. But one of my club athletes. So apparently, they didn't do too well at one of their tournaments. They just didn't execute. And this, we can have a whole nother discussion on this.
Yeah.
So the coach literally said at the end of the tournament, they went 0-4. All right. Well, Wednesday at practice, you guys, I counted, you made 20 mistakes. So we're going to run 20 100s. Just stupid in the club setting. You're wasting money. So the girl literally said at training on Monday, I'm just not going to practice Wednesday. So, hey,
how about that?
Boom. I was like, how are you making this team better? Like your girls aren't even showing up. Right. So again, like to your point, like if kids know that, like, especially if you use conditioning as a punishment, like it's not intellectually thought out. It's just random shit thrown together. Like they're going to either go soft. They're not going to put effort forth. And ultimately, like, you know, you do in a certain sense. And again, in your other podcast, like you can't train soft and expect to play hard.
Right? Heck
like,
no. Heck no. You can't.
We all understand that. But that doesn't mean you have to train like a donkey. Like if you train like a donkey, you'll probably play like one.
Right.
Like, so again, like we're not saying like don't condition ever. Like don't, you know, you can't, you have to train fatigued at some points. But do that during drills. I think that's the best way. Like play fatigue during drills because like that's the actual mental part. Like, okay, like I have to actually execute a skill directly related to my sport when I'm fatigued.
Yep.
What's the best way to do that? Just practice, man.
Do it.
Like practice.
Said
like,
principle.
100%. And hey, here's the thing too. Like if like especially by soccer players in this area, they do a ton of pickup. They just set it up themselves.
Yeah.
They'll go out there for 3 hours and play and they're gassed. And you know what? Like if some nerdy strength and conditioning coach was like, whoa, the work to rest ratio is crazy. Like whatever, like they're literally playing their skill. They're going to get better at their skill. And yeah, I mean, obviously they're doing it fatigued. They would get better at that rather than me making them do a bunch of shuttles and then being like, all right, go play soccer for 2 hours.
Yeah. And then that in turn makes their, if they're already too fatigued to go work on their skill,
100%.
You're neurologically fried. You're not going to enhance skill. It's just not going to happen. You know,
no.
I'm going to talk about a thread that Steve, I think his last name's Magnus. His name's Steve Magnus. He's wrote a few books. I think he's more of like a cross country, marathon type guy. You can look him up on Twitter, but he had this interesting thread the other day, and I'm going to see if I can try to pull it up on my phone because I don't want to butcher it because I thought it was that good. Talking about, he broke down like the actual, like what makes it so good of training and fatigue, like we just talked about. And he talked about like feeling pain during training and where your brain goes and how like the brain plays a huge
role. That.
Right. Okay, here it is. All right, got it. It was like, if you haven't worked out hard in a while, at the first sign of discomfort, you tend to freak out. You want to quit even though you are okay. It's a perception problem. It's a brain problem. And it applies to far more than exercise. And he goes on this thread talking about he's a lifelong runner, comes back from a long injury, hasn't ran in a while. First hint of heavy breathing, your body's saying, stop. Why are you doing this? And it went through your head. Then you have a decision to make. But the more you hint at and keep training through that, your body's not going to throw up that warning and that danger signal anymore. It's just your brain being scared of something new, right? That's what happens is your brain does that. It's scared. It's your brain's literally trying to keep your body from dying. So when something that's hard, they try to stop it. But if you show that it's safe over time, your brain eventually gets used to that. Same thing with trying to execute skill and practice. Like Tony Holler has done some great things for our industry. One of the worst things I think that he could preach in football is that you should always be about being fresh. Like, I'm sorry, but if you come to Alabama high school from Illinois and try to do that, you can get your teeth kicked in, homie. Like, I'm just telling you. Like, there has to be a toughness aspect. And what that means is not toughness and conditioning. It doesn't mean toughness for the sake of toughness. It's we're practicing our skill in practice. We have to get reps to get good at it. You're not always going to feel great. What are you going to do with that? Where's your mind going to go? You know, how are you dealing with pain? Like, how are you dealing with discomfort? How are you dealing with hard coaching? How can I help you overcome those things? That's mental toughness training. And it's making a decision to not quit and to try to stay inside yourself when those warning signs come up. And eventually you will train yourself into making a better decision every time. Like I firmly believe that it's got to happen in some form or fashion. If you look at a sport like baseball, that's not, you don't play in near of a fatigue state, not even close, hardly ever. But the mental challenge is ridiculous. So it's the same concept, just in a different way. You might not feel physiologically discomfort, but you're going to be mentally discomfort because it's so grueling to be successful, and you can fall into these you know, slumps and all these things where things aren't going right, and it can just really drag you down mentally. It's the same concept. You know what I mean? And being able to do those things. I think it's super important that we can't get, like, we can't just always be fresh all the time. Like, we have to train hard.
And I think too, like, you can't just go balls into that concept, because like, if we're talking like speed development, if I'm running a speed development session, for sure, like, I want my guys to feel fresh, like, when they're going into their reps. If we're doing skill work or conditioning, or in general, like, there's going to be times where, like, there's days where, you know, you don't feel like 100%. Like, I'm not gonna be like, all right, like, you're tired. Okay, take the whole day off. Like, at the end of the day, like, we take surveys every day for, you know, for our athletes. Like,
yeah,
if they're in the 2 out of 5, okay, you're still gonna train. Like, sometimes you gotta, like, I'm not gonna be like, all right, every day you gotta lower the weight.
Yeah,
because I think that they'll get used to that too. Like, oh, I'm not feeling good. Like, I'm just not gonna do as much.
That's a bad thing to teach in life too, man. Like,
100%. And I was even looking back to this summer, just talking to one of our pro guys. He was actually, he was just saying, like, sleep's overrated. Like, I think, he was saying, like, I think, like, getting 7-8 hours, like, I can get 4 or 5 hours. I've been doing it forever, and I perform at a really high level, and I'm not going to get into that. Like, that's not my topic. Regardless, like, every day, some days he would show up and he's like, yeah, I'm like a 2 out of 5 on his readiness scale. Freaking just, once he got after the warm up, he was fine. Like, he PR'd in the summer, like, sprints, jumps, weight. Like, it's crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like the mental aspect of it, like
the brain can play tricks on you, man. Like, I don't think, you know, like you can, you don't realize how much.
There's been days, even recently, I hit my, literally like a month ago, like I had like an awful night of sleep. Like, I don't think I slept a second. And I like was like, I should take the day off. And I just got to the weight room and I was like, you know what? Screw it. Like, I'm going to train, and literally hit a jump PR. It's crazy.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
The like world has no, a quote from Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I think this is powerful, is that the world has zero obligation to make sense to you. It has none. And us trying to act like we know everything about the body. Yeah. You're crazy. Like, you're living in Looney Tune land. Like,
it really is. And the hardest part of like coaching, especially in the performance side of things, like you don't want to be dangerous too. Like,
yeah,
like, you know 100%. What I mean? Like, obviously, like every summer, we're going to see it this summer. Some kids, I hate to say it, and I hope we don't see it, but some kids going to get seriously hospitalized or die.
I know.
From some stupid training. Right.
Yep.
So there is a catch 22. Like, you got to know, like, all right, what's enough is enough. But if you don't put yourself through sucky situations, like huffing and puffing, like at times, like you don't know how far you can go.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. And as coaches, you have to train your eye to be able to sense when things are going bad and not 100%. Trying to talk yourself into seeing what you want to see rather than taking an unbiased lens. That's a skill that that's the thing about like technology will never, ever replace is our ability to see things based off of relationship and just understanding human dynamics, where if you train your eye to see things from, you know, from both sides, trying to be as unbiased as possible and not just trying to, because it's easy to fall into a trap of, I put my heart and soul in this program. This is what I want to see happen. So I kind of manipulate it to make sure it looks that way. Like, you see it in high school all the time of like, I make this example about why, like when you start chasing numbers on the back squat in high school settings, if the coach relates success with high back squat numbers, the athlete's automatically going to squat higher because you can squat more. And then you celebrate that, right? And the squats are getting higher. The sequences are getting worse. The squat being high doesn't make the squat bad. It's only trying to lift a really heavy weight for no reason makes it bad. And then all of a sudden your squat numbers appear to be higher and you think your football team's better. Like that's a red herring, you know, like that's completely false. And coaches fall into that trap. Like, oh, our PRs have gone up. We've been successful this off season. Like, no, is that just what you wanted to see? So you literally manipulated it to the point where you wanted to see that. Like that's hard. Like it's hard not to fall into that trap sometimes.
Yeah. And again, I think like that's where having a really, really, really good relationship with your sport coach and them just, they have, and again, like they have to have a willingness. It takes two, like the strength coach has to know like numbers in the weight room don't always equal success on the field. And you can't just chase these numbers, but the sport coaches too have to have that like openness to understand that. Like at the end of the day, like the best teams are the ones that have the best coaches, the best athletes, like first and foremost,
yep,
best tactics and everything. And then honestly, like performance metrics, that's, and again, like this has taken me a while, but when I first got into high school, I was probably that person that I just chased numbers.
Yeah, right? Man, I was there.
Young strength coaches. And now obviously like I want my movement to be good, but like I want everything to be good. I want the movement to be good. I want the speed to be good. Like at the end of the day, like I care so much more about our jumps now than I ever did. Mm-hmm. Because like, and again, like referencing like our boys soccer team went undefeated this year. If we had states, we probably would have won.
Yeah.
Or had a really good chance. We let in 4 goals this year total. Like that's really impressive.
Wow.
Our best player, I don't think he could front squat 135. I really don't.
Right.
But like he was healthy.
Super skilled. Stupid skilled.
And he was fast, strong, a little relatively strong, but like he was fast and powerful to where he needed to be. Right. Like, I think if I was to be like, all right, we need to get you in the weight room every single day this summer, we need to bulk you up, I think he would be a worse soccer player. So like get athletes to the point where they like, I don't want to go into like the strong enough debate, but like get athletes to the point where they're good enough, where their skills just completely enhanced because of that and taking over at that point.
Yeah. Keep the main thing, the main thing, man.
Yeah. Beginners, or let's just be honest, kids that won't see the field as much, like those are the kids that I'm like, all right, like we're going to get you strong. We're going to get you big. Like, cause it's a confidence thing.
Yep.
Role players, especially in a sport like football, like let's be honest, we know our guys that are never going to get in. Like, all right, man, like I want to fill your sleeves. So you're looking good on the sideline and that type of thing.
Yep.
But you know, I hate to say it with your studs, like you got to be real careful, man. Like,
yeah,
your players that are getting into the game, like chasing numbers for the sake of chasing numbers. And that's the thing too. Like if they're going to go play in college, we're talking about 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds. Like if they're going to play in college, they still have 4 more years of lifting, training hard. Like,
yeah,
you know, don't burn the stake.
No doubt. And I hear college strength coaches complaining about like, we've got to reteach all this when they get here and you can tell who's been good.
That's your job, man.
No doubt. I'm like, I'm not saying like, I'm going to make sure my players are being able to perform at this level. First off, to even get to you, like, you mean able to earn a scholarship to even get to you first off, but two, like I'm gonna try and make sure they move well. But dude, like, don't complain about that. It's your job, man. Like, don't be that guy.
And here's the thing, like, that's crazy if a college strength coach would say that, because A, you're getting an athlete that's playing in college, so their skill level is probably pretty high, and yep, they'll probably pick up training. It'll probably take maybe a little while, but like, it's not gonna take that long. Mm-hmm. But like, we get eighth graders that are these gangly little kids, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like that's your job. That's your job as a strength coach, to train.
Yeah.
To teach, I should say.
No doubt.
That's funny.
So one question I ask everybody, and I really want to, I'm going to turn it into more of a positive spin. I've been asking it in a certain way. I'm going to ask it a different way here, is that part of my podcast is just to bring a lot of relevance to the industry itself and like things we see that aren't going well. And we complain quite a bit on social media about pay, about how we act, you know, how we just tear each other down all the time, or just how things are executed in the field in itself and get celebrated. Joe, what do you want to see grow most in the profession as far as like all of those things I just mentioned? Like, what do you see that we feel like we don't do a very good job of? And let's discuss solutions from things you bring up.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it will ever get to that point, but I like to view ourselves as professionals, right? Like you would too.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying we're more important. I'm saying we're all equal levels, especially at the high school collegiate setting. Private, I don't know if we can control that setting. But at the high school collegiate, I view athletic trainers, physical therapists in the team setting, doctors, strength coaches on a very similar level.
Yeah.
So I think the barrier of entry in this field needs to get raised.
Yeah.
First of all, when the barrier of entry raises, I think the turnover rate drops. So like we have so many, and this is, again, we had 3 interns that applied, that worked with us this spring. I think only one of them is going to continue with strength conditioning.
Yeah.
We get that all the time, that these interns want to be strength coaches. They intern, then they realize like, oh, well, this field's a grind, or, oh, like there's not much money in this field. Oh, like, and there is, like, we, again, that's a topic for another debate, but the turnover rate's high. And I think like part of that is, you know, sometimes there's just a lot of people that get in this field that don't really, maybe aren't as skilled. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. So I think from a collegiate setting, like, I personally think there needs to be a direct route to be at the college or high school setting. You know, I know like to be an athletic trainer, to call yourself an athletic trainer, you need XYZ.
Yep.
Same with physical therapists, you know, license, so to speak, chiropractor. But these are all like preventative measures. Like, people don't see those people until they're hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Where with trainers, strength coaches, trainers, personal trainers, they see us all the time.
Right? Yeah,
they see us as more of a, they see us on the front end of things. So I don't know. I don't know if that will ever happen. It probably won't. Just because
I think it has to, man. I think it has to. Like, people say like we're about 20 years behind athletic training. It, until we're considered medical professionals, it's going to be really hard not to. And I don't know if the industry ever unionizes or anything like that, because there's so many. Athletic training looks very similar at every level as far as responsibility. Strength conditioning does not.
No.
In my opinion.
And you hit the nail on the head. And I don't know if you follow Kevin Carr, but he's one of my favorite people I follow. He's in the movement by, mm-hmm, as medicine.
Yeah.
One of the Boyle guys. But they literally position themselves as healthcare providers. And yeah, they are massage therapists. But even before that, they view themselves as healthcare providers, as personal trainers. And that, like, they use that in like their marketing and their terminology. And that's smart, because if you think about it, yes, obviously as strength coaches, we view athletic performance, but first and foremost, like, health drives performance. So like at the end of the day, yep, like all these kids we're training, like, yeah, we want freaky athletes. We want healthy people. Like, I'd rather my kids live to see a long age than to get that scholarship. Like, that's most important to me. And I'm sure most people would agree. And then even in the private setting, like, we're trying to take care of people's health. So if you view it in that sense, like, we should be on a very we should be labeled as healthcare providers in a sense.
Yeah. It's just hard to weed through the crap, man.
Like, No, I know. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't, this is a pipeline dream of mine. I don't sure. think you asked what right. I think is going to get better. I don't think it'll ever happen. You know, and the thing with fitness too, like the one hard thing, and you kind of mentioned it, there's just so much, like, PT, athletic training, like, there's a general sense of like what happens, even though some are a little different.
Yeah.
But with fitness, strength and conditioning, there's so many terminologies. There's so many systems. There's Orange Theory. There's, you know, Planet Fitness. There's yeah. Next Level, right? Like, there's just so much, so many offerings. So I don't know if it'll ever happen. One that could be better is, I think strength coaches just have to like hug it out a little bit more.
Yeah, man. Like, quit being a, you know, people wouldn't act the way they act if they could be punched in the face for saying what they said.
Yeah.
Just being honest. It's go ahead.
And I think, like, don't take things so personally. I think strength coaches, we take things so personally.
Yeah.
We're big, like, I think we're big hypocrites. Like, we talk about like culture and discipline and respect and all these things, and then we go out around and we just bash people. Like, I made a joke, like, if our athletes saw how much we complain on Twitter, like, we couldn't say shit to them when they complain about doing something.
Yeah.
But right. Like, we don't practice what we preach as much. So, I mean, people there, we disagree all the time, but people take it so personally. And I don't agree with everything you put out. Like Jerry DeFilippo, someone I really enjoy following, I don't agree with everything he puts out. Like, certainly Boyle, I know, you know, you kind of,
yeah,
you know, might not agree with everything, but like, I'm not losing sleep over it. Like,
no.
I feel like some coaches literally get in their feels, and I think we just got to hug it out, man.
Well, it's insecurity. Like, it's, there's no, like, man, Andy McCloy said this on episode 2, and I thought it was powerful. He said, there's no such thing as business problems. There's personal problems that are inhibiting you from having a good business. Same thing. There's no such thing as coaching problems. There's only personal problems that's inhibiting you from being a good coach. And a lot of that has to do with how you see yourself and how, and what you believe in the security of your own. Now, and it's hard for me to, because like, security and identity and who you are is a spectrum. There is, I believe everybody has something they're insecure about in some form or fashion in some range. Now,
100%.
Yeah. Right, so you're going to compensate for those things psychologically. Like, if you study sociology and communication, like, that's why, like, if you're not, like, things that Brett Bartholomew's putting out, you know, the art of coaching and being able to study these things and understanding how humans function, that's going to drive you and help you become a better coach. Cause like, I had the same lifestyle. I mean, the lifespan of, I feel like I'm pretty good at what I do. I saw some success. Anybody that did it any other way, I'm calling them out. And that's silly. That to me, that's a sign of a young coach. And I was certainly that. Now I'm kind of starting to get, you know, going into year 5, year 6, starting to no longer be as brand new of a coach. Now it's more about like, oh, that's happening. Can I ask the right questions to figure out why? And can I apply it or discard it to my situation? And let's talk about it. And maybe more people can hear that conversation and also do the same thing. It's the only reason why we're even having this conversation is, yeah, so many people can hear it and apply where it matters, discard where it doesn't. And that don't take it personal when somebody disagrees with like, hey, I'm box. Like, I guarantee you, Mike Boyle is probably going to listen to this because he has said he enjoys this podcast, which that's awesome because he just recently unblocked me on Twitter. So that's really cool. But anyway, when he sees like I'm box squatting all my athletes to stay strong in the summer, he's 100% going to disagree with that. 1,000,000%. Like, he hates that. That's fine. That's okay. Like, that's not a big deal. How about we get on and talk about it so everybody can hear whether they agree with it or not and can apply it to their setting.
Yeah. And that's just growth too. Like, having that, being in a place where you're comfortable and you're secure with like what you're doing, and you understand there's going to be different opinions, and so what? Like,
yeah,
like that's the world, especially now with like everything else going on in the world. Like, so what? Like, you don't have to. Like, you can be secure in a place where you can disagree with someone, but not have to like throw a fit. And that's just like keep it pushing, right? Like, there's time and place where like if you want to chime in, especially if people are asking, like if people are like, hey, what do you think? Like, that's a different time and place to disagree. Yeah. But there is certainly okay just to disagree with something you see on your timeline. Just be like, yeah, I don't really like that. Wouldn't do that. Just keep scrolling, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, you're not obligated to just always speak your mind. You know,
that's funny you mentioned that about boy. I remember, you know, when that like, what was it, like that person did that depth landing from like 40 feet or something ridiculous. Yeah. I literally was like, I was like, that's the most athletic shit I've seen. And he like slid my DMs. He's like, hey, when like, you have a little bit of fouling, like you got to be careful what you say. And that, like, now your athletes are going to be. And I was just like, you're right in a sense. They might, but. We don't have 40 boxes. I don't think they're going to be jumping off roofs.
All right. At the end of the day, you get to make the decisions, you know, and you can have conversations to where, you know, what I mean by that, you know, you're right.
Well, that's the powerful thing with social media now. And like, I know when we were talking about before, like what to talk about, like I love social media. Like it's literally your creative platform.
Yeah.
Like I've gotten to the point where early on, I think I just put out content to put out content. And then when I started getting a little following, I had a little bit of pressure, like, all right, like now I have to like schedule content. Now I have to like put it out for people. Like now I'm just to the point, like if I want to put out content, I'll put out content. If I want to, like, I don't put out all strength conditioning stuff. Some of my stuff is real random. Like I want to be real with my, especially my media game and things like that. Like I just want to be authentic.
That wins in the end game though. Like at the end of the day, be who you are. And let your haters be your haters, and let your friends be your friends, and let your believers be your believers. You know, like at the end of the day, like, you know, when they say if you've got haters, you're doing something right. Like that's totally true, man. Like, don't get upset at the fact if somebody disagrees with you. Like, cause I know every time I put something out that's polarizing, which is going to be like, hey, this is what I think, this blah, blah, blah. And somebody's going to disagree. Like, it's going to happen. Like, my Twitter has been blown up.
Yeah.
Like, the past 2 days over this box squat and no back squatting tweet.
And you know what? That's good, though. Like, people, like, that's good for the field because, like, we don't want robots. We don't want parrots.
Yeah. We have too many of those. Way too many of those. That's 100%. Talk about coaches that aren't. Too many coaches just copy and paste all the freaking time because of what, like, I think they're successful, so I do what they do, and they don't critically think. Like,
right.
We've got to get out of that.
I know, like, in the comments, like, someone was like, oh, great, like, now I'm going to adjust my program or something like that. And you're like, no. Like, think of, like, if you want to, great, but, like, think why you're doing it. And that got back to the original point. Like, I quoted your tweet. Like, I think I quoted it twice. Like, one, I was just like, this is actually really good thinking. And then one, I was like, for the record, if you back squat, it's not like you're doing a bad job. Like, like that's a great movement if it's done well. Like at the end of the day, like you got to have your why. And at the end of the day, that's the thing too. Like social media is such a snapshot, but like people don't understand your setting at all. Like it's not even, it's your equipment, it's your space, it's your kids, like their culture, their beliefs. And at the end of the day, like too, like let's be real. Like a lot of times we get pressure from our head coaches and like, sometimes we just have to bite our tongue. Like, it might not be in every setting. Like, certainly at some settings, especially at the college level, like, I have pretty much 100% autonomy to do what I want, program how I want.
Right.
Especially at the private. But, like, at the high school level, there's certain things that I have to bite my tongue on, and I have to, you know, I'm not going to say I have to, but, like, you know, I have to, in a sense, like, program a certain way or throw in some things that I normally wouldn't just to kind of, keep everyone happy, so to speak.
Yeah, but does it make you happy or drop your ego and do, like, because at the end of the day, you're not the leader of the program, the head coach is.
100%. Yeah. And again, that's the thing, too. So people got to understand, like, there's more to what you see than what you just see. Like, there's deeper things on that than the surface level content you see.
Yeah, no doubt. And ask, if you want to know more, ask a question. Because, like, that's the thing that I'm beginning to learn is that when people, like, I try my best that every time somebody asks me a question, DM something, like today, like I'm trying to make it a point to answer every single one. Even if it's like, oh, that's oh, that's dumb. Like, oh, this, that. I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about it. Like, don't take it personal. It's an opportunity to talk about it. It's an opportunity to establish a relationship with another coach who has impact on young kids. Like, that's the way I'm trying to view it, man, is like, if I can impact this coach who in turn turns around and has impact on more players and more of our kids, I have an opportunity to help. If I just come off as brash and call him an idiot, I didn't help those kids. I helped my ego. Like, I didn't do anything for the field in that manner, you know, and there's too many of us doing that. And I'm 100% guilty of me. I used to do that, you know, like, yeah, calling.
I would say I did too. And again, like, that's just growth. And the crazy thing is, like, social media and the grand, like, strength conditioning in the grand scheme of things is a fairly new profession. And I would even say, like, I haven't been in it that long, but I can even say in my area, it's becoming so much more popular. So yeah. I got to just imagine strength and conditioning has become more popular in the last like 10 years.
It's in its first 100 years as a profession. Like, it's right. Literally, it was not seen as anything until the 50s or 60s.
Right. And it's unreal. Like, obviously there's every profession is on social media in some aspect, but obviously we might be biased, but I don't know if there's another profession that's as active on social media as strength and conditioning coaches.
True.
I really don't. I mean, my athletic trainer is not filming her kids doing lifts or on Twitter talking, you know, like, and there's many athletic trainers, PTs that I know that aren't doing that. But I know like 99% of the strength coaches I know are active on their social media account. Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like when you're young too, like, how do I act? And even old people too. Like, I think a lot of the bullies on strength conditioning are probably older people.
Yeah. See, you can get stuck in that too of like, see, this is where I have a bone to pick with Mike Boyle, and I can't wait to have him on because I want to talk to him about like the whole, like, you haven't earned your stripes yet. You don't get to say so. Like, old man Gran Torino, get off my lawn, you know, like, don't be that guy. Like, I mean,
I would disagree with that too, because I even put out a tweet like, I don't know, like a couple months ago, but kids now too, especially now, are so smart and creative. Like, and they would for the whole existence of the world. But like, I learned so much from my kids. So many of my kids are like young entrepreneurs and like run businesses. I'm not kidding. I have a couple kids at my high schools that run like side gigs, and I'm like, dude, like, you're making money and you're like 17 years old. Like,
I got kids flipping shoes. I got kids running. Like, they're like, hey coach, you see this flip I made on Dogecoin in the market? And I'm like, you are 15. Like, what? And
that's what I'm saying. So like, again, like, you can learn from anyone. And that's the one thing, like, I've gotten to that point. Like, I would say between my like 22 to like probably 25, 26 year old, I thought I knew everything. And I, like, you know, that type of mindset. But now it's like, I don't know anything, but learning for, like, trying to be a better mentor, especially as like an intern, like coordinator, like trying to just be a better mentor.
Yeah.
Position myself like, all right, I'm not old, but like, I'm getting into my 30s next year. Like, you know, if I continue with this trend, like, I don't want to say this in a braggy way, but even Boyle said, like, you start to get like close to 10,000 followers, like, yep, you become somewhat of a, I don't want to say influencer because I hate that term, but like, yeah, you have some type, you have some type of, people are following you. I mean, 10,000 followers is not like a little,
you have a voice that people listen to.
Right. So like, I'm trying to be much, much more careful of what I say, cause I want to come off as obviously a professional, but like, I want to come off as like a genuinely good dude. Like, that's like who I am. And
right,
you know, I don't want to be that like cocky, type of person or just bully or anything like that on media. Media is crazy, man.
Yeah, it is. And it's, I think the reason that these kids have become more creative and smart is because of things like YouTube and the internet and social 100%. Media. And they can access information so much faster than when we grew up and no longer have to rely on what their parents are telling them is good or bad. Now they have 5 million voices telling them, and they can, and the smart ones will think for themselves and challenge it. That's why old school coaching doesn't work anymore. You know, like, I,
100%.
People say kids have changed. I'm like, no, the whole world has changed, man. Like, it's been like, you look at the lifespan of a cell phone and how I remember being in like Little League, 10, 12 years old. That's when like the Nokia brick where you're playing Snake and you can send 20 text messages. Like, in high school, I had a Nextel. I don't know if anybody even remembers Nextel, where the walkie talkie cell phone. And it took literally like 6 to 7 minutes to download a text message. Like, texting wasn't really a thing. And then now we have literal businesses and computers that can run at the palm of our hands.
It's wild. And I can even think, like, the rah-rah coaching, man, like you said, like that stuff just, it might win for some programs. It might, but like I look at some of the most successful coaches that I've seen just personally at our high schools and colleges, and there's time and place for sure. Like they'll get amped up and like, you need to tell your team how it is. But like on average, they communicate. They're like Bill Belichick, so to speak. Like they communicate effectively. Like they know how to talk to their kids, motivate them, get them to do the work. And they're not yellers. They're not screamers. They're not, you know, slamming on lockers, so to speak. So, I mean, to your point, like the world's changed. Kids haven't. I mean, you could say kids have changed, but so have adults.
Just adapted. Right? Like, we've adapted to the world that we live in.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got to understand that and keep chugging along. Cause that, I mean, you got to adapt or die, man. It's just part of it. Like if you stay, you know, rutted in the world that what used to be, you're going to get left behind. And that's in everything. And that's now that doesn't mean jump at every shiny new toy, right? Still stay principled, stay grounded. Like, for example, I have so much respect for my head football coach here because he has an old school mentality delivered in a new school way. Like it's unbelievable how skilled he is at still delivering a Nick Saban discipline. We're going to be about work and hard work all the time, but being able to still connect with our kids and inspiring them to want to be a part of it rather than being like my way or highway, you're soft. That doesn't come out of his mouth. Like it's interesting. The coaches that are high level communicators and can do that. Don't think that you have to coach these kids soft. Kids want structure. 100%. They want to be coached hard, but they also want, they're going to challenge you and make sure it makes sense. You better be ready to answer that question.
Yeah. I mean, again, you mentioned 10-1, so it doesn't seem like it's,
I mean, he won a state championship with a small bunch of country boys. Like he's going to be in the Alabama Hall of Fame.
Yeah, like you kind of hit the nail on the head, but like you said, kids want to work hard. Like kids aren't like your ballers. They want to work hard. They strive off that. They want that, but like delivering it in a way that isn't like forced. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
People don't like to do things that they feel like is forced. So like, however you do that, come up with a culture where it's just like, this is just fun. Like working hard is fun.
Yes. That's a great point. Man, like love working, love to be about your business, like love to be about your work. Get to a point where you start to enjoy the work.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I don't understand. Like people say, do what you love. You'll never work a day in your life. No, I work my tail off. I'm exhausted at the end of the day, but I love every second of it.
100%. It's funny. Like I'll give you an example. What we do at Penfield on Wednesdays, we do speed and agility in the summer. We get like 60 to 80 kids that come up from every sport. The only reason, I shouldn't say the only reason, but like 75% of why they come is because after we play World Cup. I don't know if you know World
Cup. Yeah, heck yeah, I do. I played it.
So like we play World Cup after. So like the kids, like we're like 20, 30 minutes into speed and agility. They're like, hey, like this is great and all, but can we just stop and play World Cup? And I'm like, you know what? Like, fine. Like, we'll, you know, every once in a while we'll cut it early. And we'll just like, we literally do like teams of four because there's so many people.
Right. That's where you like have a country and you got to yell out your country's name and score. Man, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Dude, it's, and just watching non-soccer players play is like hilarious. I remember the last summer, 2019, we obviously couldn't last year. We had like theme day and like four of our football guys were like country. They just wore like plaid shirts and jorts. And just, like, it was awesome. But like, again, like, and I'm not to my own horn, but like Gary Schofield said this too. Like, he's like, all right, when I program, like, you know, do no harm, right? Like that's goal number one. You know, decrease likelihood of injury, improve sport performance. But then like, you got to program fun. Yeah. And like back squats aren't fun. Front squats aren't fun. Like you got to actually think about when you program fun, and that's not soft. That like,
it's really
like,
not every practice.
Like there's a time and place, but like, throughout the grand scheme of things, like on a weekly basis, if a kid just comes home like, I didn't have any fun that whole week, like you're failing as a coach.
Yeah, no doubt. I 100% agree. It's
especially in the weight room, man. Like, man. The weight room, especially in the, like, if you have a 1 to 2 sport athlete, especially football or any sport that's sport athlete, they get done in, you know, November. You expect this kid to come November through August to train and not have any fun? Just like, all right, I'm just going to lift. lift, go home. Like, nah, man. Like, you gotta find ways to make it fun. Whether it's little theme things you do, music, just conversations.
Yeah. Like, see, that's, and it's funny. One of the best ways I've connected with my kids is music. Like, I'm pretty, 100%. I stay current with music. I don't care what you say. Like, you can all be like, the music's a distraction, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, put your ego and put it in your back pocket and listen. When you put the song on the loudspeakers that the kids get hyped to and enjoy it, you know, you're putting small deposits in their mind that, like, oh, coach is vibing with me. Like, coach gets me. Like, you're building trust. You don't realize it, but you are.
Well, and again, like, I can't speak as a sport coach because I think that's a different animal, because you ultimately control wins, losses.
Yeah, yeah.
I shouldn't say control, but playing time. But as a strength coach, like, you're literally their, like, mini, you're in a different position. Like, yep. Kids will open up to us more than most head coaches.
Well, like, there's no tension of, like, I don't know if coach, if I say this, he's going to think of me this way and is going to put me down on the depth chart. And, like, they're constantly playing that in their mind. When they don't have that with us, they have freedom to communicate freely.
100%. Yeah, man. Like, that's funny. J. Cole's album dropped, like, last week. Like,
it's banging it.
Been bumping.
Banging
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, no skips at all on the album. But, yeah, man, those little connections, like, it's funny, like, when people are like, oh, like, the music, like, this, when the strength coaches, I see this too, like, no band music, it's got to be country only or something, like, dude, like,
that's selfish, you know, as crap, man. I'm sorry, like, that's so selfish.
Or like, when they're like, all right, we have theme days, it's like, yo, let your athletes pick, like, yeah, like, maybe no cussing, I get that,
yeah,
no, none of that, but like, literally, we have our iPad on, and I'm like, just make sure the explicit's off, like, play what you want. Like,
you know, I'm gonna say something here that may get really, it's gonna be pretty brash, but this is how I really feel, Joe, and I want you to hear it from me. This is what I truly feel now, and if you guys don't like this, because, like, you know, we live in a world now where, you know, racism's being exposed, and I'm gonna talk on this, and I don't know if you're comfortable with it, but this is I'm gonna own it because it's my show, but. A lot of old coaches that grew up in an era of the 70s, 80s of hard rock, metal, country, you know, hip hop didn't become popular until the 80s, really. You know, like Ice Cube, all those guys, Dr. Dre, when they finally decided to stand up and do their own thing, and it just caught fire. Now hip hop is the most popular genre there is, 100% across everybody. And we grew up in the late 90s or the 90s and then early 2000s. Where it really started to pop off, you know, you got these old coaches, like especially old white coaches that didn't listen to that, wasn't a part of their growing up culture. So when they hear rap music, they automatically qualify it as bad, you know, or like, oh, it's a bad message. I'm like, you're listening to Kenny Chesney say it's 5 o'clock somewhere, you know, like it's talking about drinking at any hour of the day. Like, let's not get away from thinking that music, that all of a sudden rap music is bad. Now, I'm not saying that all rap music messages are great. Let's not say that, because that's not true. But it's a culture difference. And people, if you can put it, your own beliefs in your back pocket and connect with your kids on what they like to listen to and still do it in a tasteful, professional way, you can build trust in that area. It's literally a way that I've connected with my kids, is because I actually genuinely enjoy the same music that they have. Now, some of these new mumble rappers, I don't know about all that. You know, I'm starting to realize I'm becoming more of an old head than I think with some of these, you know, like Pooh Shiesty, like this guy, like who is this? Like, okay, he's got some banging beats, but you can't even understand what he says, whatever. But,
well, I think it goes to say, like, you get outside the textbooks, like, every now and then. I mean, you can watch a Netflix show and that you can connect with your athlete better, like learning about pop culture,
yeah,
than diving into a strength and conditioning book for the third time. Right. Like,
yeah,
having that connection, like literally some of my, I'm not afraid to admit this. I love the show New Girl. I don't care. I don't care.
Good for you, man.
Hell yeah. But like when my, like I'm talking to my female athletes and they're like, oh, like, I don't know what to watch. And they're like, what's your favorite show? I'm like, listen, like, New Girl to me is like The Office. I could just put it on any season, any episode. I can shuffle it, and I'm just loving it. And like, oh my god, yeah, I love this show.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, that's gonna do me better than being like, are you guys feeling fried? What's your, how are you feeling today? What's your readiness survey? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like at the end of the day, like I had this mindset too. Like, this is how I approach strength conditioning. Like, I want to behind the scenes know my stuff, but like not be a nerd when I'm on the floor with them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to coach them up and teach them like what they need to know, because they do need to know certain things. Is like when they know the why, they'll buy in more. But like after that initial, I'm like, I'm just talking to them. And then I happen to be training them at the same time. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say I've had success, but I feel as though I've done a decent job, you know, connecting to my athletes better doing that than just being this whole like, performance, strength, structure. That's just not the way I run things. I don't think I would have success to being like that. And that's not me. Like, it gets back to your point. Like, that's not me. Like, I am kind of free spirited in that sense. Like, so that's kind of how I coach.
You know, just keep being you, Joe, and you will keep seeing success. And there's no doubt about it. You say, I don't know if I've been, you've definitely seen success because you've had connection with kids. And there's a reason why I love my title here at the school of being, human performance. You know, it's about our awesome. Humans performing. Like, literally my job description is about increasing physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental skill sets that are going to help them be better humans. Like, that's literally my vehicle being athletic. Like, I don't get judged off of anything athletic performance wise. It's human performance. And that's why I love where I'm at, because the vision aligns, you know, and you're doing the same thing. And I think that's awesome. And guys, I'm telling you, we could probably talk for 3 hours. There's no doubt about it if we wanted to. But Joe is so, like, you're so active on social media, and you talk to everybody. You answer people's questions. You're personable. You're easy to talk to. If you guys want more, because I mean, he talks about being a real person, but don't get it twisted. Dude's a really good coach. Like, if you've got questions, ask him. He's coaching at the high school level, private sector, college level concurrently. You don't get many perspectives from coaches that have done that. Go ask him questions. He's a great resource. Coach, where can, if they want to come find you and ask questions, where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So both my Instagram and Twitter are the same. So just my name, Joe Artari. So just Joe, J-O-E. Can you spell that for a second? J-O-E. And then A-R-A-T-A-R-I.
Okay. And just hit him up, you know, add him, send him a DM. Ask him questions. He's always been great.
Down in the DMs. Yeah. it'll be I know, like, so here's the bad thing with Twitter. When you don't follow someone back, it goes to a different, like,
request.
Private message.
Yeah, exactly. It has to, like, message request, so, and you don't always catch it. Yeah.
I know. I catch them, like, maybe 2 weeks later. I'm always like, Coach, sorry for the delay. Like, here's my answer. They're, and again, like, they're always really respectful about it. Like, people understand. Right. That's the one thing, too, like, reaching out to people, like, getting back, like, ASAP, it's so difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
But always will. Just might not be, you know, might take a week or two.
Good deal. Well, thanks, Joe. This was a great conversation. There's no doubt he'll be a repeat guest on this podcast, because we just have so much more we could talk about. Been the longest podcast so far already. We've been rolling awesome. For an hour and a half, man. It's just been good. It's been natural. If you guys have questions, please reach out to me, reach out to Joe, and appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll see you guys next week.